The following is an exclusive sports presentation of Extra Sports 1300.
Next, I'd like to introduce...
Throw your hands in the air if you's a true player.
Southern Colorado, it's time for your live and local sports talk show.
That boy is good.
Good and terrible.
Drive Time Sports, presented by Tilted Kilt Pub and Eatery, your sports action hub with over 54 TVs so you don't miss out on the action, located at Woodman and I-25. The only place to hear talk about your teams.
I think you two dudes are going to become real homies.
Where do we find these guys?
Oh man, I hate those guys.
Here are your hosts, Ryan Kaufman and Chris Braden, with the godfather of Colorado Springs Sports Radio, Wheels.
Good Monday to you. Hope you enjoyed your weekend. All the dads out there, hope you had a good Father's Day. I know I did. My kids took me to the zoo here in Colorado Springs, which, by the way, way better than the Denver Zoo. I'm just saying now, Cheyenne Mountain Zoo, greater than sign, Denver Zoo. My son threw treats to a gibbon. There was a sloth 2 feet above my head. It was a great day, and that's an awesome zoo. So if you're new to town, or maybe you haven't checked out the zoo, you totally should, because it was awesome. I want to start today with sports and politics, and this is a subject that has come up a lot recently, obviously, with Colin Kaepernick and LeBron James and all this kind of stuff. But now there are a few stories recently that have started to blur the line between the two, or at least have an impact on both of them. On one side, you have Steph Curry reportedly skipping his White House visit. No official word yet on what the Warriors will do, and I don't believe that there has been an official invitation extended. I assume there will be. Maybe not. It is. We do have a President Trump, so who knows? So he may say, you know what, you don't want to come, I don't want you here. But for now, we assume that that invitation is coming, and when it does, Steph Curry will decline.
Knowing how Trump is, the Golden State Warriors will come out and say they're declining it, and then Trump will be like, well, I never invited you.
Right. I'm sorry. New phone. Who this?
Yeah.
Steph Curry, at least, is skipping the White House. And in my opinion, look, I'm not a huge fan of our president. I didn't vote for him. I disagree with him on a ton of different stuff. But I said this before with the Patriots, with Air Force. Air Force, obviously, different situation because that's their commander-in-chief. But just the idea of all these championship teams over the years, that over the last year or so, that there has been a discussion. And there, to be fair, there was discussion about people missing a White House visit because they disagreed with Barack Obama. So just to be fair, we're not saying that this is uniquely a Donald Trump issue. This was a Barack Obama issue, but I would say that there's certainly more scrutiny now, and it does seem like there are more players that are opting, or at least saying they won't. But it has happened to both our last president and our current president.
I remember Tim Thomas of the Boston Bruins said he didn't want to go because of Barack Obama.
Right. So, and what I say across the board, because, again, not a fan of this president. But we talked about the national anthem on Friday and Max Kellerman's ridiculous comments that that's the NFL, you know, putting in politics, injecting politics by playing the national anthem and urging that we stand. And I don't want to get back into that today. But the idea of meeting the president is not it's not a custom, it's not political, it's just what you do. It's a tradition. Okay? And everyone has the right to opt out of that tradition. I'm not saying that you shouldn't, and I would certainly say that them opting out, Warriors players opting out, is a much better route than them going and like screaming in the president's face or something like that. So certainly to politely decline is a better route than going up to the White House and trying to cause problems or have a debate with the sitting president of the United States. So if that's the option, then I will take the polite decline. I get frustrated sometimes when, like, you don't like President Trump, guess what? You're going to shake his hand for 2 seconds. I've always said this. I used to have this debate with Republican friends of mine when we were talking Bush, Obama, that sort of thing. And I've maintained this into the current administration. I don't believe that any president throughout history is an evil human being. I don't believe that George Bush was an evil human being like Democrats said he was. I don't believe that Barack Obama was an evil human being like people on the right said. And I don't believe that Donald Trump is an evil person. So to me, to not even go and shake the man's hand and receive an honor that, by the way, is bestowed on your entire team, not just you. It's not just Steph Curry being honored by the White House. It is the entire Warriors team. Now, if the entire Warriors team does opt out, that's a different conversation. But as of right now, it seems like one or two guys are speaking and they will detract from what is supposed to be an honor. There's another thing that came down today that is the politics or the political system taking themselves out of sports. Now, the Supreme Court ruled today that the government can't refuse disparaging trademarks. Now, this is not Daniel Snyder coming to the Supreme Court about the Washington Redskins trademark. It is a band called the Slants that obviously the Asian American community did not appreciate this trademark, and that was the case that the Supreme Court heard. Now, where we relay it to sports is that the Redskins are in a similar thing where there's a large public outcry for Daniel Snyder to get rid of that nickname. Now, what the Supreme Court did today emboldens Daniel Snyder because now his trademark will be, I don't know, the legalese or where it's at from a legal perspective, but he'll get to have it. And now you can't knock off the Redskins. And the government can't say, ooh, that's offensive. We're not going to grant a trademark. Basically, the Supreme Court said, if you want to have an offensive trademark, that's just bad business. But that's not our deal. And I think that that's a really good way to look at it if you're the Supreme Court. Because while I do believe that Daniel Snyder should change the nickname, because I don't believe it opens the floodgates. A lot of people say, oh, it's opening the floodgates. In 60 years, if we want to have a discussion about how the Broncos is an offensive name, then I'm willing to have that discussion because it's coming 70 years down the road. There is a team in the NFL and a team in the four major sports that's nickname is offensive. That's trademark is widely believed to be offensive. So I do think that Daniel Snyder should get rid of it. And I do think from a business perspective, he can make a lot of money off of it. But I applaud the Supreme Court today by saying it's not our business. We're not going to interfere. We're not going to, government and politics aren't going to get into sports. There's enough of that going on. This is not a realm that we want to get into. I will keep banging the drum that I don't think that Washington should have the nickname that it does. I don't think the Indians should have Chief Wahoo as their logo. I don't think that local high schools here in Colorado like Lamar should have Savages as a nickname. But that's something that I want us in the private sector, the public, to push for, not for lawmakers to be taking time to do this. But all of this brings up the inevitable question that we always have. Sports and politics. Do you like when sports figures and teams get involved in politics and vice versa? Hour number three on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. Ryan in Wheels with you. Adam Morris from Denver Stiffs will join us in the next segment. In the meantime, let's give you the stories that are driving the show.
As you're driving home, here are the three stories that are driving Drive Time Sports.
What's driving the show? Brought to you by Bob Pincus, celebrating their 60th anniversary in Colorado Springs. Check them out down in Motor City, or it could be up in Motor City. Either way, if you do go in there, you will find out why nobody buys just one. Story number one.
Melanson's pitch.
Drive to left field. Going back is Slater. It's gone! A cycle for the ages.
Rockies radio on the call. Nolan Arenado saved his best for last as he hits a walk-off home run to complete the cycle and complete the first four-game sweep of the San Francisco Giants in Rockies history. This from ESPN, the fifth player in Major League Baseball history to complete a cycle with a walk-off home run.
Second Rocky to do it.
Yep. Cargo.
Yep.
In 2010.
Nobody remembered till yesterday.
That is true. That is true. I did not remember that until the yesterday.
Which means we'll forget about this in a couple of years.
Liars. That I disagree with, because yesterday had the feel of, there have been plenty of Coors Field great home runs, right? Dante Bichette on opening day, first game in Coors, Clint Barmas opening day off of Trevor Hoffman. If you want to go back to the Mile High days, obviously Eric Young's home run to start the franchise was a pretty big home run, but to me, that home run yesterday felt like one that could go a little bit further than just being like a great moment. Like yesterday was a great moment. There's no doubt about it. But having blown the save, that was Jake McGee that did that instead of Greg Holland. They blow the save. You go into the ninth and everyone's like, ugh, got the Diamondbacks coming in on Tuesday. We don't want to go in with a loss. We want to be on the winning streak. And then, sure enough, everyone gets on base. Nolan does that. Feels a lot like Ryan Spielborg's grand slam that he hit, coincidentally enough, against the Giants that really sparked Rocktober. Todd Helton hit a walk-off against the Dodgers about a month later. That was a really big home run. So I just feel like that home run yesterday meant so much more than even what it meant to yesterday, being a cycle and being Father's Day and everything like that. I feel like regardless of what happens this season, that will be one of the most indelible images. But I think that that was a big win yesterday, because now even though the Diamondbacks are on a longer winning streak, you're on equal footing. You're on equal footing. You're both have won at least a handful of games in a row, and right now the Rockies sit one game up on both the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks. D-backs coming on Tuesday. Wednesday night's game can be heard right here on Extra Sports 1300. So it was a great moment, no doubt about it, but it feels like it could be one of those all-time great Rockies home runs from Nolan Arenado yesterday. Story number two.
Do you want to stay in Indiana, and how do you proceed at this point? Does the All-NBA situation will that have an impact on what you do?
I ain't even at that point yet, Bob. Next question.
That is Paul George from April, late April. Season's over. Pacers, tough year. And Bob Kravitz, who used to write, I believe, for the Denver Post or the Rocky Mountain News, one of the two. Anyway, that rabbit hole. Asking Paul George then, didn't really want to answer. Just the other day, he said he was committed to the Pacers, and I guess he had to clarify and be like, just 2017-2018, I'm committed to the Pacers. Paul George telling the team, I don't want to leave you in a tough spot. Just know I'm leaving after this year. Not re-upping. Obviously, the Lakers are reportedly the place that he wants to go after next season. But what happens in the meantime? teams are starting to line up around the block for Paul George. I've seen things out of Cleveland. In fact, Cleveland's really busy. They're also rumored for Jimmy Butler. But I've heard things out of Boston, out of Cleveland, out of LA, of course. Does Magic Johnson pull the trigger now for him, or does he wait for the year after this one? I think that the Nuggets should be in on him. Now, they made a big swing at the trade deadline, didn't work out. The Pacers said no. Reportedly, Paul George also told Tim Connelly, respect what you're doing, not the place for me. To me, though, you try again if you're the Nuggets. Because, really, other than from a fear of loss perspective, who are you really going to be bummed out that you got nothing? You got 1 year Paul George for? Jokic, Murray, sure, you wouldn't want to trade them for 1 year Paul George. Would you trade Wilson Chandler for a year, Paul George? Would you include Emmanuel Mudiay for a chance at 1 year, Paul George? And here's the thing. If the Nuggets are really on this trajectory that we hear that they are, where they're starting to be taken more seriously, players around the league are starting to take notice and respect, as Paul George said a couple months ago, respect what Tim Connelly is doing, then why not trade a few guys that you ultimately don't believe are going to be part of the team when the Nuggets become really good? Train him for Paul George. Get him in the building for a year. See what happens. The Nuggets are really no different with big-time free agents than the Rockies are with pitchers. What we always say with the Rockies, you have to draft and develop, obviously, but if you have the opportunity to trade for a star, or in the Rockies' case, trade for a top-line ace, you do it. And you pay the price. Because these meetings that they're getting with Dwayne Wade last year and Chris Paul this year, they're nice. But there's no substitute for having a guy in your building and seeing what you're all about. And playing with Nikola Jokic. And doesn't hurt that Paul George is a Broncos fan. So I say if you're the Nuggets, I'm not saying give up everything, but I'm saying it's worth a call. It's worth a call to not Larry Bird, whoever's running the organization now. I think the Nuggets should absolutely go hard after Paul George and see what comes of that. Story number three.
It is Father's Day, so hopefully, like I said, I didn't get him a card, so I really hope this works. This will do.
That's Brooks Koepka after winning the U.S. Open, giving his dad, apparently, the U.S. Open trophy. Brooks Koepka played a fantastic week of golf, especially this weekend. But to me, I think this is more about who wasn't around than who was. I mean, if you watch down the stretch yesterday, tell me that you weren't pulling for Ricky Fowler. Everybody was pulling for Ricky Fowler. Why? Because he kind of has that Kardashian factor, right? That his coach wanted to beat out of him a few weeks ago. But he has that appeal. Ricky Fowler is a star. And you could have aligned a star with a major championship. It would have been huge. So while we always talk about, you know, when's Tiger coming back? Golf needs Tiger. I don't think that golf has to have Tiger if they can get these young stars, Dustin Johnson, Ricky Fowler, if they can get these guys major championships, I think it's huge. And look, maybe for Fox it's good because Ricky Fowler was there on the last day, and in the end, Brooks Koepka winning is not of consequence to them. But I don't look at Brooks Koepka and think that this is going to be like a star is born. I think this is a major champion and he deserves all the credit in the world. But I don't feel like we're going to have a sustained run of success with Brooks Koepka. And I think Ricky Fowler is somebody that really needs to win a major, and he was damn close. and he played really well. And how about Matsuyama? Holy smokes, did he play well on Sunday. So you had some guys with that star appeal, but Brooks Koepka is not one. I'm sorry, he's not. And golf needs stars. They don't need Tiger. They just need multiple stars to kind of step forward. So Brooks Koepka win the U.S. Open. I mean, congratulations to him. I don't want to take anything away from that. But it would have been better for the sport if Ricky Fowler would have won. We are just a few days away from the NBA draft. The Nuggets with a few picks. Not as high as they've been drafting in years past, but hey, got to be happy about that. That means the team is on the right course. And joining us now to discuss a little bit about the Nuggets draft plans, including maybe going after Paul George, we welcome onto the program from Denver Stiffs, Adam Morris. Adam, good to talk to you, bud. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's my favorite week of the year, so I'm doing phenomenal. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and it's off to just an amazing start. Let's talk about Paul George, because I was just talking about this in the last segment. I feel like, okay, you don't go to Indiana with the same deal you went to him at the trade deadline. You react right, like every other team did and say the price is going to come down. But the idea of the Nuggets going after Paul George, do you like it?
You know, I don't, and I think you're right that the price should lower. I don't know if Indiana has realized that yet, but for 29 teams out there, Paul George is a one-year rental because he is going, by all indications, he is going to the Los Angeles Lakers in 2018. So I think everybody knowing that and having less time to kind of sell Paul George on their franchise, the price has to go down. And for the Denver Nuggets, I think that that price should be pretty low. Maybe Emmanuel Mudiay, who's, you know, not a terrific prospect anymore. 2 years, he's kind of underperformed. Maybe the 13th pick. Maybe you could throw in a second-round pick or something like that. And so I think the price should significantly lower. And if Indiana doesn't make a deal before Thursday's draft, I think the price goes down once again.
Chris Paul, this supposed free agent meeting that he's going to have, trying to make the Clippers jealous, or is there something there?
There's no need to make the Clippers jealous. Here's what's interesting is a lot of people saw that news and they thought, okay, that's a leverage play, right? He's trying to leverage it. But the thing is, Chris Paul has all the leverage in the world. There's 20 teams out there in the NBA, at least, that would offer him a max contract if he said he was interested. So there's really no leverage to be had in terms of contract negotiations. So I think if he is meeting with Denver and they were one of four teams that are on the short list for him, then I think he has real interest in something that's going on here. It doesn't make sense to me to bring in just Chris Paul. So that tells me that perhaps the Nuggets have some things working behind the scenes for a multiple piece trade, maybe cashing in several of their assets.
Yeah, I was just going to ask. Obviously, the timeline doesn't really work out that great. Maybe it will. Maybe Indiana hangs on to Paul George for a while, kind of lets things calm down. But do you buy the idea of either of if you bring in Chris Paul, does going after a Paul George make more sense now?
I don't think Paul George necessarily makes sense because, like I said, he's going to be in L.A. the following year. But what bringing in Chris Paul would do is it does interest other players like Paul Millsap in free agency. But even more, I think it interests players and teams in trades. The Nuggets have a lot of young talent. I think Nikola Jokic is the only one that's 100% not touchable in any trade. I think Jamal Murray and Gary Harris are only movable if you're bringing in another star player or superstar-type talent. So if they got Chris Paul and they have Nikola Jokic, you might be able to go to a team like Chicago and say, hey, we've got Gary Harris, Emmanuel Mudiay, Malik Beasley, some future first-round draft picks. Are you interested in giving us Jimmy Butler? And now you've got Chris Paul, Jimmy Butler, and Nikola Jokic. I don't think this is likely to happen, but it is one scenario that I think Denver is looking at. And that's what the Chris Paul deal, to me, more than anything, signals, is that the Nuggets might have a couple of moves up their sleeve this summer.
If you look at the assets that the Nuggets have. I mean, I look and obviously the national discussion is, oh, look at the Cavaliers. They're going after Paul George. They're going after Jimmy Butler.
Right.
And I say, I can't be the only one sitting here and saying the Nuggets have way more to offer than a Cleveland Cavaliers, because the Cavs aren't going to give up Kyrie to get one of those right. guys. They're not going to give up LeBron. So as you look at all these other teams, the Timberwolves is interesting that they're reportedly in on Jimmy Butler. But of the teams that have been rumored, the Lakers, the Cavaliers, all these other teams that are supposedly in on these guys, how do the Nuggets assets, the ones that they're at least willing to deal, how do they stack up with other teams in the league that may be looking to make a big deal?
Nationally, the Denver Nuggets, you know, sort of war chest of draft picks and young prospects ranks up there in the top three or four around the league. Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, tremendous players that just about any team in the league would want. They've got all of their future draft picks, including this year. They have a couple more coming in future years. So they have a great collection of assets specifically for either, you know, with the Nuggets, they can either be slow and kind of build through the draft and look at a five-year plan, or they can pivot and try to cash all of those in for one or two stars. So I think you look at Philadelphia, you look at Boston, those are the two teams that I think clearly have better assets than the Nuggets. But after that, the Nuggets are right there. And you talked about Cleveland. You're right. Cleveland doesn't have a lot. They have a lot of older players, guys in their prime or past their prime. They're not going to trade Kyrie. So to get somebody like Paul George, the only way I think Cleveland could add them, add him, is if they lost Kevin Love, or if Indiana just got so desperate that no other team was making offers out there that they just were losing him for, you know, some middling prospects, middle of the draft type players. I don't think either of those things are going to happen, but Denver does absolutely have a huge war chest of assets to offer teams, whether it's for Paul George or whether it's Jimmy Butler or whether it's another star that has a couple of years on his deal.
Tim Connolly a few weeks ago said that the Nuggets would basically be willing to move up a few spots if they saw a guy that they thought would really be able to help them. As far as you have been able to identify, who might that be? If the Nuggets were to parlay multiple picks to move into, say, pick 9 or pick 10, something like that, who might they be targeting?
I don't think there's anybody in the 9 or 10 range. There is a player out there that I think is as good of a fit as you can hope for out of a 19-year-old prospect named Jonathan Isaac. He's projected to go in the top 7, somewhere 5, 6, or 7 of this draft, maybe 8. He's 7 feet tall or 6'11". He plays the power forward position, but he's got guard skills, great defender, great length, which is what the Nuggets need most. They need some length and defensive versatility. Unfortunately, he is in that 6'7", 5'6", 7'8" range, and I don't think the Nuggets are going to be able to move up that far. You know, they could, of course, if they were to trade somebody like Jamal Murray or Gary Harris, but I don't think for a draft prospect they'd be willing to part with either of those guys. So in the 8, 9, 10 range, I don't really see anybody, but if they do move up, Jonathan Isaac would be the name I would expect them to try to take.
They stay at 13. Who do you think?
The name that's most intriguing for the Nuggets at 13 is OG Anunoby, who's a defensive, a very versatile defender, just absolutely strong, kind of reminds me of Ron Artest, or I guess Metal World Peace as he's known now, just a very strong-bodied, can guard guards, can guard forwards, very versatile type player out of Indiana. The problem is he tore his ACL and is likely to miss at least half of next year, maybe the entirety of next year. So that's kind of a draft pick you make for the long-term future. But he is a tremendous player, and he fits a need of Denver's, which is length and versatility on the wing. The problem is just with knee surgeries. You know, as being a fan of the Nuggets, they've had some unfortunate history with power forwards and knee injuries in the past. I don't know if the Nuggets can stomach another risk like that.
Yeah. I know, Ken. That stuff goes back to Kenyon Martin. My goodness, it's been have been for
Antonio McDonald.
Right? No, yeah. Even more so. Yeah. What do you? I got kind of a personal thing about Lauri Markkanen. I would really like the way that he would fit, and he's all over the place on draft boards. What do you think about him in terms of a fit?
Yeah, offensively, he's a dynamite fit. Yeah. I mean, the guy's 7 foot and just can't miss. He's a J.J. Redick type shooter. That's how automatic he is, you know, on the catch and shoot. So he's an elite shooter at 7 feet that offensively reminds you a little bit of Dirk, maybe Kristaps Porzingis, although less versatile on offense. He's more of a standstill shooter at this point. The problem is, he would be the worst defender on the Nuggets roster, and the Nuggets were the worst defensive team in the league. So you're talking about kind of going all in on this offensive attack and not having anybody that could defend. But so he's interesting. I do think he's going to go ahead of where the Nuggets are picking, and I don't think they're going to trade to get him. But he's a great fit on offense, not on defense.
One kind of Nuggets-related note, or at least somebody with a Nuggets past, David Griffin is parting ways with the Cleveland Cavaliers, and the first name that has come up is Chauncey Billups. Do you like that idea for Chauncey to go and GM LeBron in the Cavaliers?
Chauncey has the leadership. I know that he's so well respected around the league just as a former player and mentor and somebody that still communicates. He's a mentor to Emmanuel Mudiay and Jamal Murray. He's somebody everybody looks up to. So I think in that regard, you know, he would fit there. He's applied for several positions, including he's met with kind of informally with the Denver Nuggets about a position here, and he hasn't been hired. He was recently interviewed in Atlanta and wasn't hired, and some of the rumors out of those meetings were that he was a little bit old school in some of his thinking. So it's hard to say what kind of GM a guy would be when he has no experience, but I can tell you he's respected by players, but maybe he's a little bit behind the times with some of the direction that the league is going, which is often the case with former players.
What kind of weird as that sounds, maybe. Adam, always appreciate the time in the insight. I urge our listeners to follow you on Twitter at @Adam_Morris. Leading up to the draft, of course, Denver Stiffs has got the Nuggets angle of the draft covered like nobody else. Really appreciate your time, and hopefully we'll have some interesting stuff at the very least to go through this week.
I think it's going to be interesting. But thanks so much, Ryan. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. Adam Morris from Denver Stiffs, among other places, joining us here on Drive Time Sports. I think that's going to do it for Drive Time Sports. Thanks to Adam Morris, Brent Brigeman, and, of course, Dan Acheson. We will be back with you tomorrow at 3. We'll be out at Security Service Field. In the meantime, we'll take a short break and get you out to Security Service Field for Sky Sox Baseball next here on Extra Sports 1300.